Okay, so we heard from the actuaries last year that this is the single largest issue facing the city of Warwick. Pensions and healthcare are issues that are, from previous administrations up to the current administration, has plagued the city. Healthcare was given away at a time when it was $2,000 to $4,000, and now for a family plan, it's $20,000. And we heard them testify that it's unsustainable. Future councils are going to have to deal with this issue. It's a significant issue. And retirees and employees have to deal with this issue also. And very rarely have I seen, as long as I've been on the council members upset that we're trying to give the public more input rather than less. And Councilman, I'd just like to applaud you in putting forward this, because that's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to give the public more input. And as we know, we've had issues with the board in the past, the retirement board. The attorney general had to get involved. We had fines. We've had other members of the public go there and be cut off from speaking. They don't have enough time. We only have so many minutes. You can't ask those type of questions. That's not on the agenda. And public debate was cut off. So those things have to be addressed going forward. And what I'm really concerned about, and we've talked about this a little bit before too, that whatever decisions the board makes for municipal, in essence, the same investment advice is given to police and to fire. In other words, finance takes those recommendations and applies those recommendations to the other two pension funds. The other two pension funds are nowhere near as liquid as municipal. Municipal has the best ratios out of any of the three plans. So the problem becomes, the level of risk that you're willing to take for some plans may be different than for other plans, depending on the facts and circumstances of each plan. And I think the more discussion, the more input, the more ideas from the public or questions the public raise, I think the better off we are. I know, Ed, before you got on the pension board, nobody had questioned, and you had brought out the fact that we weren't meeting our expectations as far as our investment advisors were going for, I think, what, 4 out of 5 years or something. It might even been 6 out of 7. And until you raise that issue, that hadn't been raised before. And there are a lot of people out there that have investment knowledge that maybe have an issue that someone else didn't think about. So I think it's important. It's important to shed light on this, and it's also important for everyone to understand it and for it not to come up only when a contract comes up or only when a budget comes up for ratification and we hear about what our unfunded liability is once a year, when people could be talking about it and asking questions for a longer period of time. Those are my concerns. I think more input is better than less. I think that this is the single largest issue, not just facing Warwick, but most of the communities in Rhode Island. And I think that as far as the attention of the council goes and the public is probably one of the items that we give the least amount of attention to. we talk about it the least because it doesn't come up on our agenda. It's on another board's agenda. And, you know, just for example, on healthcare, was it 2 years ago, our annual required contribution went from $23 million to $34 million in 1 year. That's over a maximum tax increase, bringing in about $8.3 million. So these are issues that need to be addressed, that need to be talked about, and you need more public involvement, in my opinion, because just talking about it once a year, and I like what Councilwoman Travis had to say about a special meeting. I think she's right. She sat here, she's listened to it for a long time. She knows the significance. And there's a lot of people in these pension plans, besides what the public is paying, that are relying on this. And I can remember hearing stories from receivers in Coventry and the receiver in Central Falls about how people were crying when they found out the news that their pensions were getting cut in half. And to me, the issue is people do better, but this is my opinion, paying over time, spreading out payments over time, than have all of a sudden find out what the actuaries keep telling us year after year after year. And since it didn't hit, it's non-existent. It kind of reminds me of the argument we're having with COVID right now. You know, whether some people wonder if it's exaggerated and some people wonder if it isn't, even though the numbers keep going up. And until it hits you individually, it's not real. And that's how I feel about this pension and healthcare discussion. I believe that people don't believe it's real, or if they do believe it's real, they believe it's best to kick it down the road. And if we kick it down the road, maybe they won't suffer the pain of that issue. Maybe they'll outlive that issue. And these aren't my words. These aren't your words. These aren't any of the council members' words. This is what the actuaries are telling us. This is not sustainable, what we have set up, and we need structural benefit changes. And you also need, you know, as far as contributions go. So Ed, I know you have some legislation on there addressing some of those issues too. But I just think ignoring the problem and having less discussion is not a good thing. That's why I'm in favor of it. Your legislation doesn't mean that any changes are going to be made to any of this legislation, that somebody has to now pay X dollars or whatever. All it means is you're having a discussion and you're giving it the appropriate time and weight that you need in my opinion, the most significant issue facing the city of Warwick. Thank you.
I have a question for for Attorney Walsh. Attorney Walsh, what happens if, per the proposed language, the chairperson or the financial advisor of the board does not appear to the city council before the city council, according to section 1-4 of our ordinances?
Thank you, Councilman. Pursuant to section 1-4, which is regarding general penalties for violations of ordinances, it sets forward a procedure whereby there's essentially a potential for a penalty to be provided of a fine not exceeding $500 or imprisonment not exceeding 30 days. It's hard to say what specifically would occur. The process would have to play out whereby they would be cited for not being present or violating the provisions, but it would still have to go through municipal court and those findings. So it's hard to project what will happen, but the theoretical provides that because this the proposed ordinance before us does not submit a specific penalty, section 1-4 would then be triggered by any violations thereof.
All right, that's what I thought. And we already have the power to subpoena information at will separately, so it's not like, should there be an issue and we needed information, we didn't have the option to subpoena it as the council. So it's a no for me, as long as people are potentially have the option to be punished via prison time or a fine, especially when we already have the ability to get this via subpoena.
I don't have a problem amending this, Ed. I don't have a problem amending this to taking out a penalty for a fine or imprisonment. I don't know what your opinion is.
Well, I have no problem with that either, Mr. President. I also would have no problem because, I mean, things happen. As an example, a very wonderful thing happened for Councilman McAllister, and he's unable to attend the council meeting tonight. So I have no problem amending it that the chairperson or his or her designee, financial advisor, or his or her designee, as well as eliminating this new thing that's been brought up here about penalties and jail time. I just find it interesting that, you know, years ago, before some of our colleagues were not on the council, it actually goes back to when Mayor Solomon was council president. No, actually, it was when he was Councilman Solomon, I believe, first enacted the first appearance of the sewer authority. So we have sewer authority appearing before us. We have the water department appearing before us. We have the city engineers appearing before us, et cetera. I don't recall any of them ever getting fined for not appearing. I don't remember anyone getting arrested because they didn't attend. So this isn't like setting up some brand new thing that is, you know, oh my God, this is you know, brand new here. This has been going on for a very long time. And again, my position with this is why anyone would deny a year meeting to bring additional transparency, to encourage additional discussion, to encourage additional overview and accountability to one of the largest book of business that we have in this city, a once a year meeting is just beyond me. It's just beyond me why anyone would oppose doing this in a special meeting particularly. But yes, I have no problem amending or taking out the word fines and jail time and inserting chairperson or his or her designee, financial advisor, or his or her designee. Attorney Walsh, could you just, I'm making those amendments. Could you just make note of those? Because then I'm going to have you read this whole thing over. Councilman Quilt, Bill, you're muted.
Yes, I followed a few of those things. We can review the specifics when you are ready to make your formal motion, but if you want to finish discussion on these items in case that potentially changes any other proposals that may go into your final motion.
Thank you. Councilman Qualley, you had your hand up.
Yes, instead of having any language concerning any sort of criminal penalty like a fine or I suppose a prison sentence could be also included. It seems to me that it would be much more on point to simply have a section of the law that if the city official did not show up for the meeting and, you know, was given a chance, I'm sure people get sick. Things happen all the time. But if, you know, they were given a chance to come back, and if they don't, there should be just ground for removal if they're not willing to come to a public meeting. I think that the more public hearings we have, the better, because especially when it comes to issues like finances, there are many members of the public out there that probably have a much better background in finance than members on the council. I have spoken to constituents that I think know a lot more about finance than I do, and I listen to them. So having them come to speak to the city and to answer to the taxpayers, I think can only bring us positive results. And I don't expect that somebody would blatantly stand up to the council and say, I'm not coming to talk to you. And if they did, they should lose their position if they want to take that position. That's all.
Thank you, Councilman. Any other comments from members of the council? Hearing none, Attorney Walsh, could you read into the record the proposed amendments, please?
So could you make your motion? I need to follow through all the items you were looking to change again.
Okay. The motion would be to...
Are you changing, in section one, for example, are you changing anything to the proposal to add the two persons ex officio?
Okay, we can withdraw line 29. And we can withdraw line 32.
Okay, so the motion, so your first part of your motion would be to delete section one of this proposed ordinances, which is lines 21 through 35. Is that
no. No. It'd be okay. The two underlying items, treasurer and city council liaison.
So your intention is to not add those people to the board. Those are the only right. changes to that subsection. So for a drafting purposes, we wouldn't need this section to appear because we're not going to be changing anything.
Okay. Yes.
So, yes. So the first part and of your first part of your amendment would be to change, would be to delete lines 21 through 35. Is that accurate?
Okay.
We would also update the title in lines 14 and 15 to delete, add members to the board and, okay?
Correct.
So that would, the remaining item, section two would become section one on line 36. And now we are just looking at the proposal as presented already, which is having the chairperson and financial advisor appear on an annual basis to present the report and update the council. So are there any changes you would add here as it relates to penalties?
Or the designee, chairperson or designee, and financial advisor or designee.
And no penalties.
Or designee. And no penalties. Financial advisor or designee. And then, okay, if you give me 1 second. Okay, so just to recap for members of the committee, as well as the council and members of the public, Chairman Lattiser is looking to introduce an amendment that would do as follows. On lines 14 and 15, it would be deleting add members to the board, and it would delete lines 21 through 35, which were the proposal to put new persons ex officio onto the board. This would leave just one on line 36, this would become section one. On line 45, after the word chairperson, we would be inserting comma or designee comma. On line 46, following advisor, we would be inserting comma or designee comma. And then on page two or line 47, depending on how you printed this, the last sentence ends with pension fund. Before the period, we would be inserting a semicolon and say, provided, however, that violations of this section shall not be punishable under, and the, I'll put in the full cross citation, but it would be under the penalty provisions of chapter one, section 1-4 of the ordinances. And that would be the amendment as I present to you, Mr. Chairman, if that is your intention.
Yes. I believe that takes care of at least most of the concerns that anyone had. So now we would need to move a motion on the amendments, correct?
So if that is your amendment, you can make it as read into the record, and to be, and since this will come back before council, again, everyone will see this on the potential, as well as we'll read it again formally before the full council, should it be viewed favorably later this evening. But it would, the item would require a seconding at this time.
Okay, having said that, I will move PCO 7-19 as amended and read into the record by Attorney Walsh.
Second.
We have a motion, we have a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye. No.
And we have one opposed, okay. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, before you move further, if you would just double check to make sure, now that we're back on the proposed amendment, the item you are amending, just make sure that before we move forward here, members of the council and the public opportunity for any input on the item as amended.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from members of the council on the amendments?
Just one.
Who, identify yourself, please. Who was that?
Sanappi.
Okay, go ahead, Councilman Sanappi.
Last time we had a floor amendment, you were willing to hold it so that we could actually read over the language and properly discuss it next time and make sure we were comfortable with the language. I'd request the same courtesy.
I believe that this has been held long enough. We had adequate discussion on it this evening. I think the amendments are very simple. They're very straightforward. Should be pretty easy to understand. Any other questions from members of the council?
So Councilman McAllister doesn't deserve to speak on this, is what you're saying, right?
He will have an opportunity to speak on it on the second meeting.
That's but if he has any issues with it, then it gets bumped back to first meeting, thus negating the first passage. So why would we be duplicative in that regard when we can do it right the first time?
That's what you're saying is speculation, Councilman Sanappi. We don't know that. I've held it long enough. I'm not going to hold it again. We can vote on this evening. Its future may go to the second meeting. It may not. If it does go to the second meeting, Councilman McAllister is more than welcome to have any and all input that he would like to have. So it's not that he is being left out of this. He is not. A matter of fact, based upon Councilman McAllister's comments at the previous meeting where I agreed to hold this again, I have recognized his concerns with line 29 and 32, removing out the additional ex officios. So yes, I have given that consideration. Any other questions from members of the council?
No. Recall that the opposite logic was used by you on a prior occasion, but do what you will.
Thank you. Any other questions from members of the public? Do we have any questions from members of the public?
We do have one question from a member of the public. This is Chris Kate from MIS, Councilman.
Okay, go ahead.
Joe, go ahead and unmute when you're ready.
I didn't have a copy of the original in front of me, and I'm going to wait until I see the copy of the second. Councilman Lattiser, you and I have already talked about the pension board. I don't think the makeup of the board needs to change, because I can't imagine any taxpayer in the city of Warwick or any union member or anybody that has any skin in the game wanting for anything but our pensions to be maximized. The one thing that we did talk about, and we need to bring this up obviously at the next pension board meeting, is that I've only been to one meeting, so I'm far from an expert on all this, is how nimble our process and our pension system is. So in other words, everything else in government grinds slowly. This is an area that shouldn't be so slow. If we need to make changes, we should be able to make changes. We need to find out what the process is and time limits on things to get things changed to maximize our dollars. I just wanted to get that in. I'll wait to see what the redone ordinance is. Thanks.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. I appreciate your comments. But Joe, just to make sure that it's clear to you, the two lines that would have added two ex officios, they have been removed by me in my amendment. So,
okay, thank you.
Your point about the additional people, your comments as well as comments from my colleagues have been heard, and I have made those amendments.
Okay, thank you, Councilman.
You're welcome, Joe. Thanks for your comments. Any other comments from members of the public?
Not at this time, sir.
Thank you. Hearing none, I need a motion on PCO 7-19 as amended. I will make that motion for favorable action on PCO 7-19 as amended.
Second.
I need a second. We have a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
No.
Oppositions? Councilman Howe, no?
No.
That was no? Okay, thank you. Okay, we have two yes, one no. Motion passes favorably. PCO 7-19, ordinance relative to senior and veteran exemptions. I'm going to make a motion to hold that until, November 16th. I need a second.
Seconded.
We have a motion, we have a second, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, motion passes, three favorable. A PCO 21-19, ordinance relative to employee benefits. Bear with me on 1 second. I'm going to hold that one also until November 16th.
Seconded.
Oh, bear with me on that. Hold on 1 minute. Okay, yes, that's correct. We have a motion. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Council President?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. An ordinance relative to tangible property tax regarding vacant storefronts. Councilman Snappy.
Just going to hold that to the next meeting.
PCO 29-19.
Just going to hold that to the next meeting so McAllister has a chance.
Okay, so that's held to November 4th, Councilman?
Yes, please.
Seconded.
Okay. We have a motion, we have a second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. PCR 195-19, a resolution relative to creating a commission to study health insurance benefits, Councilman Sinappi.
Same thing.
Hold till November 4th.
Seconded.
We have a motion. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. PCR 94-20, formerly 2021-130, police breast hats, badges, insignias, etc. Major Micheletis.
Good evening again. The police department would like to withdraw this bid. We located an error within the RFP and we need to go out to rebid.
Okay, at the request of the sponsor, I will make a motion to withdraw. We need a second.
Seconded.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. And that concludes our items. And the meeting is adjourned at 6:42 p.m. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ordinance would be up next. If I could just have one quick minute before it's called to order to catch up on some notes here.
Sure. Done. Take you need a 5-minute recess, counselor?
No, just 1 minute or so.
Just okay. Got it.
Thanks Thank everyone. You. If I can. Thanks everyone for indulging. Members of the council, thank you for the moment to catch up, and I'm ready to proceed. Ordinance committee.
Okay.
So, gonna try to get this car debt going off. It's going to the mechanics. They're gonna fix the door. Tonight's my last stab at it.
Who is that?
Hi, Ed. It's Mary Ellen.
Uh huh.
I'm the court reporter.
Okay.
Are you doing the? Are you hosting?
Madam stenographer, we're not. We're still in committees right now.
We're still in committees.
Thank you. Okay, I'm just gonna mute myself then.
Next committee is Ordinance Committee, Councilman Cawley, Councilman Snappy, and with Chair McAllister out, I'm going to assume the Council President is going to sit in for Councilman McAllister, or I can. Councilman Cawley?
I don't know if the President wants to sit in or not, but since he's not so, here right now, then I suppose
I can I can sit in, Councilman. I can sit in.
Okay, fine. Let me look at the ordinance agenda. The Okay, there are several housekeeping matters, and that is the acceptance of minutes from June 29th.
So moved.
I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
The second item is the minutes for July 13th, 2020.
Excuse me, Councilman.
Yeah, what are you reading from?
You have the wrong committee docket.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Should be October 5th.
That's fine. Okay.
I just resent it.
Okay, well. I can't access it while I am here. So perhaps
it's October 5th, Councilman Cawley, for the agenda or for the minutes. Councilman. I'm sorry.
Councilman Cawley.
Yes.
Check the front pocket of your binder.
Yeah.
Please.
I have it. Okay, October 5th. The acceptance for the minutes on October 5th.
So moved.
I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, the first item on the agenda is PCO 15-19 sub A, an ordinance regarding health insurance for city employees. It's being sponsored by Councilman Lattiser and President Marola.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
You want me to begin?
Yes. Could you go forward?
Sure. So this item is something that certainly has been in discussion for quite some time. And what I'm looking to do with this is to bring us essentially to the same place where the state is with their contracts. We have an extremely rich healthcare benefit package here. If not the richest in the state, certainly one of the richest. And it's at a point where this isn't something that the taxpayers can continue to bear the cost that they're bearing with this. Certainly nowhere in the private sector that I'm aware of, including most of the larger corporations, have a benefit plan that has such low deductibles, has such a short cap on prescription drugs, and lifetime healthcare. So I'll just go through these changes as they appear in your binder. And on line 16, it says, provided, however, that the following provisions shall be part of the health insurance benefits under collective bargaining agreements that commence after, and I reiterate, commence after the effective date of this amendment to the ordinances, but shall not affect any collective bargaining agreement which is in effect at the time of the effective date of this amendment to the ordinance. Currently, the deductibles that we have for individuals is $250, and on a family plan, it's $500. I don't know of any other plan anywheres in the state that has anything as low as that. I'm looking to increase that to $500 and on a family, $1,000. Right now, we do not have a co-insurance provision in our healthcare plan, and this would implement a co-insurance, a minimum of 90%. And the example that I would put forth is that if you had a hospital bill of $10,000, using a round number, you would take your $500 deductible off of that. The bill would remain at $9,500. With a 10% co-insurance, it would add $950 to that bill, increasing your out-of-pocket expense to $1,450. And this is taken from the state's website, by the way. That's where the majority of these changes have come from, basically mirroring the state. So an out-of-pocket maximum for an individual would be $2,000. And that includes the copays that we spoke about just a little bit. So once you reach that maximum of $2,000 on the individual and $4,000 on the family, you would be capped out at that point. Another extremely expensive portion of our pharmacy copay, which is just, it's just mind-boggling to me that we still have this. And what we have is on the pharmaceutical copay, it caps out at $300 for an individual plan and $600 for a family plan. That's just unbelievable, keeping in mind that the prescription drug plan in our healthcare is a huge, huge portion of our healthcare expenses. And a cap of $300 for a single and $600 for a family is just not affordable for the taxpayers. It's simply not affordable. So a copayment of 20%, capping out at $2,000 for an individual and $4,000 for a family plan. That's what the change would be. It also says all caps on co-shares based on premium increases on the city's health plan shall be removed from all collective bargaining agreements upon next expiration of now current agreements. So as I said before, this language up to this point does not include changing anything in a current contract. It also changes the co-share, which again, this is simply mirroring the state with the state has in their plans. And it says for individual coverage, if the plan participants earns an annual salary less than $102,840, the co-share shall be a minimum of 25%. Right now we have 20. If the employee earns $102,840 or more in annual salary, the co-share, the wording there is, it says the so-share, but it's a typo, it should say co-share, will be a minimum of 30%. For family coverage, and that's, by the way, again, as I said, language from the state website. For family coverage, if the plan participant earns an annual salary of less than $53,948, the co-share shall be a minimum of 20%. If the employee earns, and there's another typo in here, it says $53,498, it should be $53,948. Up to $102,840, the co-share shall be a minimum of 25%, and an employee that earns over $102,840, their co-share would be 30%. Annual salary does not include overtime pay or other non-salary wages. Retirees, retired employee co-share of plan premiums. Back going to, I believe it was 2019, I believe it was, we crossed the threshold of having more retirees than active employees. The free healthcare, free lifetime healthcare is simply not sustainable. It is simply not affordable to the taxpayers. And this is something that is just going to become more and more expensive as time goes on. So the language here is current retired employees younger than the Social Security normal retirement age shall pay 0% for any retired employee younger than SSNRA receiving a pension benefit from the city of Warwick of less than $30,000 a year. And I put the $30,000 a year threshold in there because it's a benchmark that I think we need to be cognizant of, and that would have no copay at all. Those retirees at or above 30,000 shall pay a minimum co-share of 25% of the premium cost of the plan then offered by the city. Current retired employees at or above shall not be eligible for the city's active employee health plans, but will be eligible for a Medicare supplement plan offered by the city. The co-share for these plans shall be 0% for any retired employee at or above receiving a pension benefit from the city of less than $30,000 per year. Those retired employees that receive a pension benefit from the city of Warwick at or above $30,000 shall pay a co-share of 25% of the premium cost of the Medicare supplement plan then offered by the city. The increase I've also put in here that it would be a tiered increase. This isn't something that is going to be added in all in the first year or the second year. I have proposed that this be tiered in over a five-year period. So the retired employee co-shares shall be phased in over a five-year period coincidental with the passage of this ordinance at 5% per year, whereas at the end of the five-year period, the retired employee is paying a total of 25% co-share. Year one, 5%, year two, 10%, year three, 15, year four, 20, year five, 25. All years after year five shall be a minimum of 25% co-share. Employees hired after the passage of this ordinance shall no longer be eligible for the city's medical insurance program upon retirement. This was changed, I believe it was in 2008. The city council changed lifetime family health care to, I believe it was only for the employee. That is no longer affordable to the taxpayers. That is something that is almost eliminated in the private sector, where when an employee is employed by its employer, they have certain benefits, including health care. When they retire, the health care stops. There are many organizations throughout the country that no longer can afford lifetime health care, and certainly the taxpayers in the city of Warwick can no longer afford this. And I do not believe the teachers have lifetime health care upon their retirement. This is a cost that will continue to grow in a very rapid rate as health care costs continue to go up. And the taxpayers can no longer bear this burden. We can no longer afford this burden. And as I said, the proposed language changes that are in this ordinance are essentially mirroring what the state contract has. And that is what I'm bringing forth to you this evening for discussion. And at some point, I will be asking for a motion for favorable action on this. And I don't know if anyone is out here right now and the attendees who, well, I'll leave that up to you, Mr. Chairman. So that's what my presentation is at this point.
Okay. Well, I see. I'll defer to the president and then to Councilman Sinapi.
Thank you. Obviously, I'm a co-sponsor on this. And what the reason that we work so hard to put this in is because we've been hearing testimony about the healthcare, including when our actuaries came before us last September. at that time, they again said that this model is not sustainable to the city, meaning it will fail. The question is when. That's not Steve Marola or Ed Lattisaw saying that. That's our paid actuaries hired by the Solomon administration, okay? And the Avedisian administration said it before the Solomon administration said it. And our unfunded liability in 2019 was, I think it was $405,800,000. That was our unfunded healthcare liabilities. Currently, our employees, they pay close to a 20% copay or about a 20% copay. At one point, it was fixed. And when they retire, they don't pay anything. And Councilman Lattisaw raised many good issues regarding what some of the provisions that we have in the city of Warwick. I know I've talked to Councilor Conley about this because he's on finance up at the state, and I know they negotiated their contracts up there and what East Providence does. And I know he was very involved in Johnston too, what some of the other communities are doing. I've never heard of a 300, 600 copay prescription cap. It's unheard of. And this obviously isn't going to go back in time and affect the contracts that were passed last year. But it will address what needs to be in the contracts in the future. Now, that doesn't mean that future councils can't go back and amend this ordinance and change provisions within this ordinance. It's just that we, as council members, as you know, when the contracts came before us, we heard time and time again, we do not have the power to negotiate contracts. So what Councilman Solomon had done in the past on different issues and is we had passed ordinances to make sure that certain provisions were complied with. We did that with pensions, for example, that they have to be funded at a minimum amount before a pension change can be made. That's an ordinance that we have in the city of Warwick right now. And I thought it was a good public policy. And I think Councilman Solomon was right when he put that in. And I think this is a good public policy. And I think that this is probably unreasonably fair to the, if the public were to look at this, they would see some of these provisions. And I dare to say they're still too rich. But it was, these are the same collective bargaining units, national organizations that, or the national organization that negotiated this at the state level. So I can't imagine that it would be unfair since they already said that it was fair at the state level. So I thought that, and Ed thought as well, that if we mirrored the legislation that's already been passed by those collective bargaining units, that it would be significant. Now, you know that a maximum tax increase is about 8.2 million, maybe 8.3 million now. This has the potential, if implemented, of saving between $4 and $5 million a year. Is that accurate, Ed?
Yes, that is correct.
I think it was closer to $5 million a year, which is significant.
Yes.
But more importantly, it's fair. It's fair to everybody. I think that if you look at these provisions, it's still probably overly rich. But that's not the issue before everybody, okay? Because this is an ordinance, as I said before, it could be amended. It just sets the tone for what the direction we need to be in when we get to these next contracts. And more importantly, it addresses the issues that we have been warned about year after year after year by our actuaries. The benefit structure is unsustainable. There's a win-win here for no one if we leave the situation as it is. It's not a win for the taxpayer, and it's not a win for employees if they're not going to have those benefits. And as I said, that's not Steve Marola saying that. That's the actuary saying that. And so I think that having this ordinance with the ability to amend it in the future to set the tone for discussions in the future, to let everyone know that, hey, look, at a minimum, you should have this, is the direction that we need to head in. And Ed, I know you and I were having a discussion the other day because I think in our budget this year, 2020, we had some conversations that we were very concerned about what our collection rate would be this year, because I think we set it at 99%, even in the middle of COVID. And I think right now it's around 94%. So I hesitate to guess without any collections coming in so far for vehicles, because we haven't set that yet either, what finances are going to look like. But when healthcare costs right now are $34 million a year, that's our annual required contribution, and we're paying about $11 or $12 million a year, that's significant. And a maximum tax increase being at about 8.2, four times that would be what, $32 million, a little over $32 million? It'd be a quadruple tax increase if we just wanted to pay what we're supposed to pay. And by the way, we don't have this argument with pensions. The annual required contribution, we make those. We make the annual required contributions for pensions. We don't when it comes to healthcare. And this should be a concern for everybody, because when you retire, you need to be able to rely on what the city told you. And if you're not, and this is going to hit all at once, I think it's going to be horrific to employees, taxpayers, and everybody else. As I said before, I'm very concerned about addressing these issues. We have not addressed these issues. I wholeheartedly support the legislation, and I appreciate all your hard work, Ed. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chairman, may I add something to that, please? Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you. So the projected savings, this was calculations by our healthcare advisor back in November 2019. And I just want to read these into the record. Plan benefit and cost share change, projected annual savings. Change benefit design to align with the state. Savings, $2,519,629. Change active employee co-share to a tiered arrangement based upon the employee's annual income, 20, 25, or 30% co-share based on income, $540,113. add contributions for pre-65 retirees tiered at 0% for less than 30,000 of retirement income benefit, 25 for 30 or more retirement benefit income, 1,727,272. Add contribution for post-65 retirees tiered at zero for less than 30,000 of retirement income, 25 for 30,000 or more. Projected savings, $251,575. Total projected annual savings, if this ordinance were to be passed, the savings to the taxpayers would be $5,038,589 in the first year. $5,038,589 of savings in the first year.
Councilman, is that based upon the 2019 figures that were being talked about during the budget or during the presentation?
And that was based upon calculations that were done by the Hill Group in November 25th, 2019. So that would have been before the budget.